Hello and welcome to Ditching Hourly. I'm Jonathan Stark, and today I'm joined by guest Graham McLaughlin. Graham, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
So this conversation was predicated on a question you sent in from the mailing list. So I wonder if you could kind of start off by giving the listener an idea of what the background is, who you are, what you do, and what's on your mind.
Yeah, definitely. So my background, I started in digital marketing like back in 2004. I was hired kind of more in a sales role, so managing affiliate programs, and kind of quickly learned that if I could help the affiliates that I worked with in things like SEO and PPC, then I kind of made more money. So totally got into marketing via kind of roundabout backwards way, but quickly kind of fell in love with like digital marketing, traffic acquisition. And it's been a real kind of windy road. So started like on how do we get more people to the site? And then it evolved into like, once they're there, how do we get more of them to do the task that we want them to do? So from SEO and PPC, that kind of led into analytics and measurement, and then into like user experience and testing, and went pretty kind of heavy into conversion rate optimization for a while. Mm-hmm. But quickly kind of discovered that, you know, me coming up with an idea for an A/B test wasn't as good as actually talking to customers. So over the last kind of 3 years, I spent a lot of time running customer interviews with the goal of kind of supporting conversion optimization. Mm-hmm. And kind of time and time again, we're able to get better wins when we talk to the people that are actually using the site and the products to understand what are their buying motivations. What I kind of found was that when you're just working within analytics and the data, you hit this false ceiling of optimization. There's only so far that you can actually get. Mm-hmm. And it's because you can't think of things in the same light because you're so close to it. Mm-hmm. But your customers have all these different questions. And so I've kind of defined loosely kind of consultant, contractor, whatever kind of digital marketing kind of problem someone had, like I was there to help over the last kind of 2 to 3 years. And I wanted to put more kind of focus on an area that one, I see is kind of growing, but two is like, there's distinct lack of, understanding. So the area of kind of qualitative research with a view of kind of supporting like a conversion or a growth program is relatively new. I feel like there's lots of, you know, product managers that are talking to their users. I feel like their angle is very much like, how do we build kind of retention and loyalty within the product, but not really understanding like, why did they buy it in the first place? Mm-hmm. And the question that I kind of reached out with is everyone that I've kind of spoken to, a lot of people that I've spoken to on this are saying that, you know, you need to be a CEO and kind of put on your CEO hat and kind of hire people to do the work and to do the craft. Mm-hmm. Versus kind of doing it yourself. And I think that it kind of comes down to what I'm kind of torn with right now is like, what's the right way to go within this?
Right. Yeah. And that's where we kind of left off in the email thread. And that's why I wanted to jump on the call, because I think it's a really interesting conversation to have. And I couldn't really, and it'd be a hard thing to do over email, because there needs to be kind of, it's a lot more efficient to do this in a real time way. The advice that you were getting, I think, is reasonable advice for some people, and I think it would be unreasonable advice for other people. Unless you shared with those people who advised you in that way what your objective is, then that's not necessarily good or bad advice. So yeah. I feel like the place to start is like, what's your objective? What are you trying to do? Because if you said, you know, I want to do this for 3 years and then sell the company to someone, I would agree with your friends.
Right.
If you don't want to do that and you want to create like, you know, potentially grow like some sort of, you know, solo operator, soloist, retire, you know, thing that you'll do for the rest of your life, die with your boots on, then, and you don't really want to be a manager, then that's bad advice. So it really depends on what you want to do. They both work. So it kind of boils down to what's your objective, and then you know, what are your, do you want to be managing a team? I guess you could kind of think about those at the same time, because if you don't want to manage a team, obviously being a CEO would be a bad idea.
Yeah. I think for me, I think one of the things I've experienced over the last like few years is you're really kind of subject to the winds of change. So it's hard to kind of grow and have that stable income when everything is kind of changing. And
what do you mean everything?
So I think that so different kind of tactics within kind of digital marketing, the different trends of, you know, companies hiring in-house versus like using agencies and kind of contractors to support them. Mm-hmm. I found that if you're not in one thing and kind of living it kind of daily, if you come back to it, a lot has changed in between when you last touched it. And like for me, that's been maybe like a year, kind of 18 months.
And you're talking about the kind of landscape of the marketplace for people who are looking for this kind of thing? Or are you talking about the technology or the approaches?
A little of both. I think definitely the approach and the technology, along with the marketplace and the way that companies want to work with like outsourced kind of contractors, support agencies. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think it's more having that longevity, like into the future, and kind of a stable revenue stream of work that I like doing. So it's less about building a massive like agency or kind of empire.
So objective. Team. So that's the objective answer. So like the answer about what's your objective? Build something stable that's like a solo,
yeah,
stable.
Yeah, because I enjoy doing the work. And I want to get better at that piece, because I know that I'm not, I have a lot of bad habits that I've probably brought into this, and there's the ways to get better. So I know that I'm not perfect. But I personally feel like I can secure that future in a better way by continuing to hone the craft as opposed to hiring a team to kind of deliver on that work.
Okay, let's drill into that a little bit in a second. So, because you mentioned that in the email too, bookmark that. Now let's go back to this objective and make it a little bit more clear. So I'm trying to take notes as fast as you're talking. I got that you wanted to build a stable but solo business. So what Seth Godin would use the term freelancer for, I don't think that's the greatest application of the term, but hey, he's the genius and I'm not. So, he's like, if you are doing the work, you're showing up and doing the work, then you're a freelancer, you're not an entrepreneur. And your friends were trying to get you to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
That people were advising you to be a CEO and create this team and probably sell the buildings, probably sell the business at some point.
Yeah.
Or at least have it, it'll just be a money engine throwing off money while you're sitting in the tropics. And yeah, okay, maybe.
On the laptop with the beach.
Yeah, exactly. Or yeah. No laptop. That you've got a team to handle all that laptop stuff. But that doesn't feel like a good fit for you. You're like, I don't know. I kind of like doing the work. I feel like I need to keep my hand in the technology because it changes so fast. And
I think that it's, I think it's like for today, yes. I think in the future that may change, but to get it started. So there's not an established way of kind of delivering this work to clients as well. It's still kind of really early. Mm-hmm. And so far, like I've tried to put together just, you know, a more of a productized approach with a sales page, to try to get people kind of interested in interviews and how it relates to growth. In the future, like it could be different, but for now, I feel like I need to be closer to it to really kind of understand like what this is.
Okay. And so let's get to the word I wrote down the word stable. I think you used the word stable. What do you mean stable? What does that mean to you, like specifically?
I think like knowing that I have work booked out for X number of months and that you're not worried about where that next, like your next project is going to come from. Mm-hmm. I think that the other kind of piece of advice that you get a lot is, oh, it needs to be recurring. Like, you need to have some kind of recurring element to it for you to really hit that stable kind of cash flow. And I think a lot of times a business idea is being forced into this recurring model because the owner wants it to be that way versus the customer wants to buy it that way.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So for this, it is very much a, it doesn't lend itself kind of, if you're going to put it into more of a recurring model, you would have to find a lower cost way to deliver it. And then that's like outsourcing or like VAs, like are doing calls that aren't as skilled.
I don't think a subscription model for this is necessarily a crazy idea, but I do agree that lots of people are just like, okay, I'm going to start a subscription business that gets monthly recurring revenue. What should I do? And they're just like starting from there, just thinking about what they want, which to me is kind of like going to an hourly rate calculator and being like, how much money do I want to charge per hour? And then just there's like this assumption that someone's going to pay it. So to your point, like that might not be a great fit for that right now based on the landscape of the marketplace and how people want to buy things and the cost of delivering what it would probably look like what they want to buy. And so like, how do we make the numbers work in a subscription model? You know, and there could, it could be, I'm not saying it's a good idea or a bad idea, but I think there are challenges and I applaud your focus on the buyer and not on just what you want. Like, what does the buyer want? So that's great.
Yeah.
It could be great. It could be a good idea, but I don't really know. Sort of jury's out on that. But and you you don't need recurring revenue. Like having a recurring revenue stream is not like a subscription model is of course not the only way to have stability in the business, but knowing where your work's going to come from, it's, you know, because then you just have other things to worry about, like churn and customer acquisition and all that. You could just as easily have, you know, you could be super famous for doing this and have like, you know, be booked 6 months out by people who are like standing in line to work with you. And that'd be a lot of stability. It's like, even if it's not for recurring revenue, you can see 6 months out that the line standing outside of your store is pretty long. So you're pretty sure you're going to sell a bunch of donuts today.
Yeah.
So there are other ways to get stability besides subscription, if subscription isn't a great fit for you right now.
And that's why that idea of kind of building and becoming an authority, like in the space, is appealing because it helps with that longevity and not just a quick hit. Like you're building an asset as opposed to just like a marketing engine that is just you pour kind of paid in the top and it comes out the back end.
Right. And this is why it's important to have a clear objective and understand what you're going for, because the strategy of building one of the entrepreneur model versus the freelancer model, if we're going to use that term, is dramatically different. Where it, just as one example, in an entrepreneur model, you don't want your face all over the business, almost certainly. You want, if you want any faces on it, it's going to be people like, you know, other people who are not you, because you don't want to be a bottleneck in the entrepreneur model. You want to basically do absolutely nothing except for set the vision, strategy, you know, and outsource everything else. Like eventually outsource everything to your employees.
And so that's one of the, like, so I've been having sales conversations with people around customer interviews, that's one of the questions that comes up. It's like, so if we're putting our trust in you, we're letting you talk to our customers without us there. How do we know that we're getting a quality person on the other end of the phone that's going to do run a successful interview without kind of bias and slant, but then represent their company in a professional manner as well.
Yeah, because they're opening themselves up to some vulnerability. Because if you turned out to be an unprofessional hack, that's not going to reflect well on them. So if on the other hand you turn yourself, you know, you become the freelancer model, you become famous, basically, you know, in like world famous in the world that cares about this, not the entire world, because the vast majority of the world does not care about this, but there will be people in some world, some pond where you would be the biggest fish, and they'd be like, well, you just automatically have trust. They would just trust, like, we know we want Grant. Like, there's no doubt. Like, of course we trust him. We wouldn't even, they wouldn't even ask. Like, oh, how do we know that you're not going to be a clown on the phone? But then you could potentially have, that problem could crop back up if you had employees, if you weren't going to be the one during the phone call.
Yeah. And I've seen that in like a past agency that I worked in, where we had like a tiered account management structure. So this was on the SEO side where we had a couple of well-known kind of SEOs, and people would always want those.
What do you mean well-known SEOs? Like employees or success stories?
Employees.
I see.
So they would want to make sure. And a little bit similar, like even on the sales side. So they had a very consultative sales approach. But then when you get into running the project, it's getting handed off to another person. And that trust hasn't developed right away. So the first 30 days of those projects were always really kind of nerve wracking because they're expecting results right away. But you haven't had that time to kind of build up that trust.
Yes. Okay. All right, so I'm hearing loud and clear that you do not want employees doing this stuff for you. So the CEO model is not a good idea for you. Like, it seems, does that seem clear to you?
Yeah, and I think that there's been a little bit of time that's elapsed, like from the email to like us talking, where I've kind of discovered this as well, like throughout the way. I think you kind of raised a question before about being kind of the like the well-known authority, and is that in the field of like what you're doing versus the industry that you do it for. And I think that's my next kind of thing that I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around and solve for.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, and you know the answer, right? Like, you want to be famous to your potential buyers, not to your peers.
Yes.
Although being famous to your peers can work, but it's a secondary, it's like a two-step process where someone's like, hey, we need someone that does stuff like this. Who's the go-to person? And everybody points at you.
Yeah.
That's not as good as if you're just famous with a bunch of people who want to stand in line to buy donuts from you. You know, like,
yeah.
not like, hey, where should we go to get donuts? And they ask a bunch of other people who make donuts.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah. We're having a conversation and someone's looking for an email kind of onboarding and kind of churn reduction, and Val Geisler's like name came like straight out of the mouth of like three different people. I was like, that's who you need.
That's funny. Yeah. Or like, and you can think of I do this all the time. So I can think of lots of examples like that, like where a particular name is going to pop out of somebody's mouth when they're looking for a particular thing.
Yeah.
And so the more famous you are in directly with your potential buyers, the better. But if you are famous with influencers of those buyers, that's pretty good too.
Okay.
So those might not be peers. They might be peers. They might not be peers. It could be people who serve the same audience and are kind of in the same space as you. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe they hire someone to build their website, and they, you know, some like marketing firm or agency to build like a website. And they're like, yeah, now we need some customer interviews on here. And every web agency knows your name and it's like, oh, you got to talk to this. We don't do that. We can't compete with this guy.
Yeah. One of the challenges so what I've done over the last kind of month, we kind of set up the sales page, a very kind of productized approach.
Who's we?
And then, me, the royal we. And then I've ran some cold outreach through LinkedIn, to gauge response. And the biggest kind of thing that we've hit is that everybody thinks it's interesting and loves the idea, but it's not a burning need for them at the moment. And I'm trying to kind of wrestle that around a little bit with, like, is it the product, is it the market, or is it the positioning of the product?
Well, who do you think needs it? Like, who's your target? Who are you reaching out? Who are you choosing to reach out to?
That's, yeah. So I have reached out to.
Stop saying we.
I know. So I've reached out to e-commerce kind of founders and owners. operators to help as kind of the first audience. The secondary one is like professional services firms. And then the third are like tech and SaaS products.
Ecom founders, professional service providers, so we say?
Yeah.
Like consultants and stuff, or like lawyers, or
everybody? So more like agencies. So either kind of creative or kind of like marketing services, to kind of understand like why did their customers kind of choose them. Mm-hmm. So if you have a pretty kind of if you're offering the same thing as everybody else, like why are people buying from you?
Mm-hmm. And what was the last one? So professional services and
so tech, kind of hardware and SaaS kind of software products.
SaaS. Who do you reach out to at SaaS companies? Like marketing, CEO?
The marketing function.
Okay. And same with hardware?
Yes. There's been a few people that I've spoken to that just kind of get it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, like we know we need to do this. Mm-hmm. And understand the value of research. So there's some people that I've spoken to that just don't. They're like, no, we're just going to muscle our way through. Like if they have $5,000 to spend, they're going to spend it on paid and just get more traffic. Mm-hmm. Other people can see the value and they can see the value in research and kind of taking that step back, but are still under that kind of pressure to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because if you're looking at a typical kind of targeting, like LinkedIn, kind of they're the same job title, same industries. So on the surface, you think they would kind of think the same, but in reality, like people are people and everybody's unique.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good starting point though. Eat the elephant one bite at a time, right? So you can at least pick somebody to focus on and see if it's common, because an industry, a particular industry, they probably read a lot of the same trade publications. They probably go to a lot of the same conferences. They probably follow the same kind of people online, or at least similar, because it's around their industry, and the terminology might be better or less well known in, between, like somebody, like I doubt like lawyers are familiar with what CRO stands for, but I'm sure advertising agencies are.
Yeah.
So at least you don't have to define the terms if you're approaching an ad agency, and you're not talking about CRO now. I just picked that because it's such a, not that well known of an acronym to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about this, like when I look at I've got your webpage up in front of me, and the headline is done for your customer interviews, which is the deliverable. It's a solution. It's not a result. So yeah. The result could be something like, differentiate yourself from undercutting noobs, geez, want to present yourself as the premium option? Stand apart from the field with glowing customer testimonial videos or interviews so actually that what is the deliverable here? Because you keep saying research, which isn't what I was picturing.
So the deliverable is kind of muddy as well, because it's kind of shifted over time. So originally when this was just like more of a productized piece, it was just the interviews. So you would get the recordings, you would get the insights from those. And where it's kind of gotten to now is that it's really more of a teardown. So we're going to interview your customers, and then we're going to kind of distill the insights from those conversations. Mm-hmm. We're then going to evaluate your website, your email, your sales flows, and see like where the discrepancies is and the gap analysis. Mm-hmm. And then one of the things that we do as well, so I will interview 7 customers, and then also interview one person from inside the company and ask them the same questions. Mm-hmm. And then there's a gap analysis there.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I could even imagine you doing more than one person inside the company and finding out that nobody's on the same page.
Yeah, that's true. And I think like early on, I talked about how like people are trying to kind of stuff product like into a recurring model. I think I've tried to like force fit this into a productized approach, which isn't necessarily the, I don't think that's the right way to do this now that I'm at the stage.
Well, so what's the, again, what's the outcome? What's the outcome that you are confident delivering? So like, if there's a thing that you'd be embarrassed by, or is an outcome, so you get to the end of a project, what would be professionally embarrassing to you if you were unable to do it?
I think if they were, if they didn't know what to do next, so they've got the research, but they don't know how to leverage that in their business. So what do they change? And I think like,
and it's always messaging, right? Like the thing they're going to change is always messaging.
Yeah. It's always about how they talk about their products. Like some of it may lead into the kind of product development angle. But the focus is really on like, why are people buying your service over someone else's and what almost stopped them from buying?
All right. So the outcome, you do all this stuff and the outcome is that the recipient of your deliverable will know exactly what to say in, what do you want to say, on their marketing or in their marketing or on their website?
Yeah, like because it runs across like paid ads as well. So
okay, what to say across all marketing so that what? So that you can justify premium fees or differentiate yourself from your competitors or close more deals. Like what are some likely outcomes?
All of the above. I think that on the e-commerce side, it's about like reducing like your cost per click because you've got higher engagement, but also increasing the return on that spend. So you're getting more efficient. So for the e-commerce crowd, that's one angle. The kind of professional kind of services group, it's just getting like better customers. So improving the quantity and quality of customers.
I would imagine decreased sales time as well, because it's like when you're truly differentiated, people aren't really considering other options as much. So
yeah.
Okay. Increase quality.
And I think that it's like before you even have the sales conversation, they're better, the client, the prospect is better educated going into it on who you are and why you, and how that relates to their needs. Because I think a lot of times, especially like in the agency kind of land, everyone tries to do the people, product, and process.
And it's
I think there's that missing step and like what does that mean?
Yeah, the dots aren't connected. Who cares?
Yeah.
What results can I expect from these all this stuff that I don't understand or care about?
And it's easy to kind of sit and kind of talk about other people's sites, but like when you're doing this on your own, like it's
impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the tech and the SaaS kind of group, like one thing I've learned is that they feel like they're already talking to their customers a lot through their product teams, and that information should be going to the marketing teams, but isn't always, but they feel like they've got this like customer piece under control.
So not a good customer for you.
I think that there's just more uphill battle.
Like I said, not a good customer for you.
Yeah.
There's a whole world to choose from. Why pick someone there's an uphill battle?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I could see you going after lawyers or financial advisors or bookkeepers, like straight up legacy professional services. Like,
really?
Oh, yeah. Why not?
That's interesting.
Maybe not, but I mean, why not? I mean, I'm not saying it's a hypothesis, but I wouldn't rule them out. I would rule someone out that thinks they already have what you do
under control.
Like, so I crossed that off the list.
I think I like the idea of it being outside of the typical kind of my typical kind of circle and path in a way.
Yeah. I mean, if you were, it's my, not the, sorry. I think it's really smart to take, like, if you've got a skill set, I think that's technical. You came from a technical space. This particular skill set's not that technical, but I wouldn't think. I mean, I don't know how much technology you're using to do it, but interviewing customers is pretty non-technical. It's all about, like, knowing how to do it, knowing how to, you know, ask good questions, be professional. It's all communication skills, right?
Yes.
So you might use Zoom or something fancy to do it, you know, fancier than Zoom, but it's not super technical. But it is gonna translate into tons of digital marketing, most likely. One would think, like, if you're not doing digital marketing, it's probably not a great fit. They're probably not a great fit. So if you looked at someone that was like I recently hired a plumbing company to come to my house, and it's brutal to find a plumber in my area that will, like, actually show up. But I found one that had clearly spent millions on a brilliant digital sales funnel. It was amazing. It was like all the modern affordances of, like, what you'd expect from a SaaS or something, like an enterprise mm-hmm. SaaS. And it was great. And they were more expensive, and I didn't care. So I could imagine another plumber looking at that and being like, I can't believe anybody hires them. They're not that great. I know all the plumbers that work there. They just spend a bunch of money on a fancy website and they get all the business. And, like, how much did you pay? Because I have a friend who's a plumber. He's like, how much do they charge you? And I said, and he's like, you've got to be kidding me. Because he thought it was so much. And I'm like, dude, you wouldn't come to my house though. And they did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I could imagine. So this is just one random particular anecdote. But that plumber that I talked to who doesn't have a good website, and I know that's not what you do, but. Mm-hmm. The idea is that he's non-technical, but he recognizes the value of all of this technical stuff. And, you know, is going to need help with anything like that. What I'm getting at is you're generally going to be better off going after customers for whom, like, everything you do is like a black box to them. It's like magic.
Okay.
Versus going after someone who basically knows how to do what you do, but they just don't feel like doing it.
Yeah, okay. That's
interesting. See what I mean? Because then those people are going to micromanage you like crazy. Be like, oh, I would have done it like this. Or did you read Lean Customer Development? That's the process we want to use.
Right.
So if you're going, like, it's the worst with developers, or especially developers. If they're talking to, like, a CTO of a tech startup in the Valley, forget it. The CTO is going to know everything, whether he or she does or doesn't. And they don't want to talk about strategy. That's my job. You just do what I said. They're not impressed with your chops with React Native. It's not impressed. You're a dime a dozen. Because they get it. Like, they know your whole thing. So if you're selling to marketers, for example, I mean, I get that the sale for you to marketers is, look, you don't have the time to do this well. I can take this off your hands. But that's positioning you. I see that as a little bit, that's one kind of sale where you're positioning yourself. It's like, you could do this, but you don't feel like it, or you don't feel like you're, they probably do feel like they're qualified. Like, yeah, we could do this if we had time to do it, but we haven't got the manpower. It's been 3 years. It just never gets to the top of our to-do list. Could you just take this off my to-do list? That's probably not as, it could be a sale that you could make. It's probably not as high value as going to, like, a consulting law firm and saying, you know, hey, you guys really want to take things to the next level. I notice you don't have any case studies or testimonials on your website, or some kind of signal that they could use this. This is the tricky part. But I feel like going after a lawyer who's maybe values or sees that there's probably some value in digital marketing, but doesn't really understand everything that's going on. And the first thing they need is messaging, and where would the best place to get it would be from their happy customers.
Yeah.
I would think. So, and okay, so I'm kind of rambling a little bit about targeting people who usually, in general, I'm not sure if this is true here, but usually in general, it's you're going to get higher value engagements targeting people who think you're basically doing magic.
Right.
So that's one thing.
And it's so the magic then for them, I feel, is that they get the complete spell. Whereas one of the things through this is it's an input.
So, correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's kind of why I'm hesitating. because this is an input.
Yeah, it would need to take it. So that, like, part of like the marketing people was they need this stuff, but they'll know what to do with it once they have it.
Yeah. So you're positioning yourself as labor, not expertise.
Right.
Which can work. You could make a, you could probably make, you know, if you were had a good pipeline, you could probably keep making money at this and do it quicker and quicker, but it's not, they're not coming to you for strategic help.
Yeah.
So it could be a starting point. It could be interesting. It could be a particular productized service that you offer, one of many. You could have other things in your product ladder that were high touch services or that were a little bit more soup to nuts. In fact, you know, I don't know if you want to do that. It's a different question, but you could do something a little bit different, like basically put together a pay-per-click campaign for you, but it's going to have this component, like, and it's going to be effective because you're going to interview customers to find out why they bought it. So it's not, yeah, it's not like it becomes an input for you to deliver a different result, a farther downstream result.
I see a lot of copywriters are using customer interviews to write great copy. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of aligns with messaging.
Right. So that crossed my mind. Like, you could kind of position yourself as a messaging consultant. And it just so happens that you come up with great messaging by interviewing customers, like a direct marketer would do. So, right now what you have, the focus that you have right now is on an input.
Yeah.
And the result that you deliver, changing nothing else, the result that you would deliver is that they would know what language to use in their marketing campaigns, which would then potentially increase their conversion rate or attract more and better customers or decrease their customer acquisition costs or, you know, depending on who you're targeting.
Yeah.
So that's okay. I mean, that's something.
And I think for me, like that comfort space kind of really aligns with, like, we'll interview your customers and we'll show you what to change on the website, but it's not taking it all the way to that done for you place.
Yeah, where you like update the website or do the design or something.
Yeah, or write the copy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? You don't think it wouldn't go there?
I've done like messaging kind of hierarchy, and it's like these are the themes that you want to get across, but I've not written full kind of production ready copy.
Okay. Okay, so that brings me to another topic that kind of comes back to the beginning, the CEO question. So there's a difference between trying to, you know, staff up an organization where you make yourself irrelevant, you know, where that's like the pinnacle of entrepreneurship, is that the business runs without the owner. Like, the owner can go to Bali for 6 months and it's fine. You know, so you don't want to do that. You want to keep in there, keep your hands dirty, so to speak, keep your sleeves rolled up, because things are changing fast. You want to get better at the craft. But you still could outsource tasks. You know, right, you could have a VA, and that's not really, doesn't make you an entrepreneur. You're definitely not building a hierarchy or like a business organization. You could hire a VA, you could hire a copywriter, or you could partner with a copywriter who did certain things, where if you had a project that was, let's say you had three different levels where you'd sort of take more and more ownership over the results or responsibility for delivering results. So this one, you could do this one, which is like a gap analysis of like, you know, hey, planning a big marketing redesign, let's double check that what you think, why customers are buying, or why you think customers are buying, is actually why they're still buying. Maybe it's 4 years old. And you just do this gap analysis piece, which involves customer interviews, and there you go. And then a tier up from that, maybe you partner with, or you find some copywriters that you outsource the copywriting work to, where you'd actually come up with, headlines or an opt-in page or a white paper or some kind of like something that where you take the insights and you create a usable final deliverable that's ready to go. Maybe it's a lead, you know, like a landing page or an opt-in page or headlines you know, update all the headlines on the homepage or the calls to action. Could be some kind of something like that where you take the next step. And even if you don't want to do it, you could pay somebody to do that piece. But of course, you would have charged significantly more for that. And then you would just kind of hire out, outsource a little bit of it.
Right.
I don't know if that's like outside your comfort zone or not, but I could certainly see that as a as an approach.
Yeah, I don't feel like that would be too far outside.
Okay. And then you could get, go even, you know, you could take it one step further and say, you know, hire a Facebook ads expert and just like turn it into a marketing campaign where the beginning of the marketing campaign is you interviewing their existing clients, and then you just take it all the way through to whatever the campaign is, and they give you a budget for Facebook ads and they can pour money on it, you know, and you don't have to touch Facebook. You don't have to create the lead magnet. You don't have to write the nurture campaign, none of that stuff. So it's like a done for you marketing thing. And now all of a sudden the lawyer thing starts to sound like, huh, that might be something a lawyer would be into, because they were the plumber, where they recognize that, damn, this other plumbing company is crushing it. They're charging twice as much as me. And I know the people they hire. I fired the people that work there because they weren't good enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, huh, okay. Geez, I wish I had time to do this, but oh, look, here's my beeper going off. I have to go unplug a toilet.
Yeah.
So these are success, but these are this guy in particular, and I know there's plenty of others. That's why they don't have time to come to my house to fix my hose. They're making a lot of money. You know, they feel like they're doing well, but they're totally busy, completely crazy, and they are working in the business all the time. And
right.
A lot of them don't even have a website at all. So imagine if you come along and you're like, would you like to raise your rates? Because they're already too busy. Would you like to raise your rates? Like, huh, yeah, that'd be cool. All right, here's what you do. And you could be like, your phone's just going to start ringing more.
Yeah.
Period. You know, tell me who some of your best clients are, your happiest clients are. I'm going to go talk to them. And I'm going to put, you could imagine the whole thing. You create a Facebook ad campaign. It goes to a landing page. It has a phone, a call, whatever. Or you pre-qualify them. And then you just like funnel stuff to their switchboard or whatever they use.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow. I mean, imagine the testimony you'd get from my plumber friend if that happened. It'd be amazing. He'd be like, oh my God, can I give you more money? So yeah, all I'm illustrating here is like, this is just me like brainstorming. Like all I'm illustrating here is that this skill that you have that you like and you feel like you're good at, you've got a sense of mastery around these customer interview piece and a lot of other experience in areas that touch on the stuff that I'm talking about, then you could package that up in, we just talked about three different ways or three different levels, where the top level is kind of this white glove, I will make your phone ring more service because you're savvy online. And then my plumber friend is the nicest guy in the world. He's not savvy online. So it would be like magic. He would give you, you know, whatever, 10 grand a month or 5 grand a month, whatever it is. I don't know how much he would stomach.
Yeah.
But you do this thing and like, it would just be like magic happened.
I've heard you talk about this, like when it comes to code and development, but there's almost like the kind of the theory around like the purism of it. So if it's like elegant, beautiful code, that's not something that people kind of care about. So when doing this, it's like, it's of real strategic importance. Like you need this to build like great marketing, but people just want the phone to ring.
Right.
More business to come in the door.
Yeah, they just want better clients calling them.
So while I'm really excited about like customer interviews and kind of geeking out over it, they that's the input and they want the output on the end.
Yeah. This is a great example of inputs, outputs, because I find a lot of people don't understand that. But
yeah,
you know, it's like I'll say to developers, you know, nobody wants your code. And they're like, yeah, they do. That's why they're paying me. And I'm like, they don't want the code. They want the outcome that they think the code is gonna. And they can't, a lot of times they just can't, they're like, what are you talking about? You're insane. But this is a great example from another field where when you hear an example from another field, it clicks better because you're like, yeah, I don't care about customer interviews. I care about, you know, like my website working. I care about waking up in the morning and having more leads than I had when I went to bed, or more sales.
Originally, like I I thought of this as just being like a conversion project. So like we're not doing like A/B testing is that like third kind of tier down the road if you have the right traffic for it. But
yeah,
it's really like so many websites are broken. We're going to fix your website to increase your leads so that all your other marketing is going to be more effective. And the interviews is that the part of it, but it's not the thing on the surface. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like I might've been just too distracted by customer interviews being like such a hot thing in my head that it's not really as exciting for other people.
Yeah. Right. If anything, it's scary. Like, I'm going to let this guy go talk to my customers. Like, well, even if you're the nicest guy in the world, it's still like an appointment on my customer's calendar that they weren't looking forward to and aren't going to get anything out of.
Yeah. And one of the people that I was kind of chatting with in the professional kind of services arena, they said no because it wasn't the money. It wasn't the deliverables, but it was one more ask that they would have to make of that customer.
Precisely. And yeah, exactly. Right.
They wanted to save that for something else, like either like a testimonial video for themselves or like a G2 kind of review, like those pieces.
Honestly, when I saw this website, I thought what you did was testimonials and case studies.
Yeah.
I didn't, when you started saying research, I was like, what is he talking about? Research. Yeah. I assumed it was for testimonials.
Right. I actually like considered kind of pivoting it a little bit and doing like Zoom testimonials, but it wasn't as exciting. I think the idea of kind of taking the research, the interviews, kind of piecing it together and building out the advertising the funnel to leads is more exciting for me.
Wait, say that one more time. The part that's more exciting.
Being able to kind of take customer research to build into like messaging, advertising, funnels, nurturing, and actually an end-to-end solution for someone.
Yeah, it's your secret sauce. That you're not afraid to talk to someone. But that's your superpower. That's not like so. Great. You can fly. How does that help me?
Yeah.
You know, you're great. You're great at customer interviews. How does that help me? Well, I'm going to get you like better clients. Like, I'm going to give you this information of like where you're using the wrong words, and maybe there's some tier that's a low level tier where they update their website and everything else, or there's a tier where you update a couple pieces of their website and they update everything else, or you just do everything. You know, and hire it out. And again, you're not building a firm, you're not building a team. You're just contracting people to do their little piece of expertise and you pay them for it.
Yeah. And I think like when it comes to talking to prospective customers, especially like when you're using that example of it's just magic, it's just unknown. Mm-hmm. It still fits a paradigm that they understand. So it's like, you're going to pay me this amount and we're going to do this and you get X at the other end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just a complete encased kind of solution.
Yeah. It's a money machine. They put in a dollar and they get two back. It's like, yeah, have more money. I know it's not that simple, but that's how it feels to the buyer. Like, the buyer wants to get value out, and it's not necessarily going to be money. It could be something more intangible or something less tangible than that. It could be whatever. It could be winning awards. Who knows? It could be also whatever they want, you know? If it's money that they want and you can come up with a credible way to deliver that, then great, you know? And if the closest that you can get downstream, so this is pretty far upstream. If you wanted to get farther downstream, I would go into, you know, using your superpower, using the special sauce for you to generate more. It depends on the client, but like demos for a software company or leads for a plumber, you know, phone calls for a plumber or for a lawyer. And be like, you know, hey, look, I'm not going to close the deal for you, but if I can get your phone ringing, do you think you can close the deals? And they're like, yes, my phone never rings. Every time my phone rings once a month, and every time it does, I close the deal.
Right.
So if it rang every day, would you be able to work that much, or is that too much? So if it rang every day, I'd probably only be able to close half of them, and I'd probably only want a half of that. So, you know, that would be, it would like 4X my business. All right. How much is that worth to you? Forex in the right. business. You like, you actually think you can do that? Yeah, I do. All right. That's probably worth 50 grand. Yeah, all right. Money back guarantee or prorated. If I only 2x it, I'll give you 20 grand back or whatever.
Okay.
But that's like that's what the business owner is going to care about. I'm coming back around. I can see why you targeted marketers at those organizations because they automatically understand the value of the deliverable of customer interviews.
And the time crunch.
Yes. But it positions you as specialized labor.
Yeah. And I think it just also adds an extra weight of now they need to do something with that.
Yep.
So
now imagine if you, now earlier in the call, well, it's getting long, we have to wrap up soon, but earlier in the call we talked about, do you want to be famous to your peers or partners that might recommend you, influencers, or do you want to be famous to your audience, your buyers? And here's an example, let's use the plumber example, where you go on stage at a plumbing conference, you're the only digital marketer there. And they're like, who's this guy? And you just start off with a case study of how you quadrupled somebody's business in 6 months.
Yeah.
And they're just like, what is this dark magic? This internet thing, maybe it's catching on. And you have a couple things like, you know, we did some, y'all have heard of Facebook. I know. Yes, we've heard of Facebook. Well, you've seen ads. Yes, yes. Well, I put together some ads for this company and I interviewed their clients and I figured out what to put in the ads. I put them in the ads and that went over to a landing page that I put up for them. You guys have seen web pages, right? Yeah. Okay. You know, so you're talking in the most basic terms about a digital sales funnel to a group of people for whom that is not their focus. Like they just don't live in that world.
Yeah.
And then what's going to happen after that? That talk that you give, your phone's going to ring off the hook.
Yeah.
And then not one of them is going to be like, you know, concerned about probably any one of the pieces. It's just like, yeah, I want results like that. I want results like that, that what you did for that other guy. Yeah. So I feel like I've completely untangled it like in a bad way. It's like you're working on a sweater and I just unravel it.
I think like what's been helpful for me is that this is a really like early stage. And I think so, like sometimes the people on the show are like at a later stage and you're helping like solve them just kind of further down the pipe. But this has been, it's been really helpful because I like a lot of the things like the value conversation and the whys, like I've used those in sales conversations. So to get kind of your take on this has been valuable.
Cool. Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, I can see we're up against time. This has been a really fun conversation for thanks for joining me, Graham.
Thanks. It's been great.
Awesome. All right, folks. That's it for this time around. You've been listening to Ditching Hourly, and I hope you join us again next time. Bye. Hey, Jonathan here again. Do you have questions about how to improve your business? Things like value pricing your work instead of billing for your time, or positioning yourself as the go-to person in your space, or maybe productizing your services so you never have to have another awkward sales call or spend hours writing another custom proposal. Book a one-on-one coaching call with me and get answers to these questions and others in the time it takes you to get ready for work in the morning. Best of all, you're covered by my 100% satisfaction guarantee. If at the end of the call you don't feel like it was worth it, just say the word and I'll refund your purchase in full. To book your one-on-one coaching call, go to jonathanstark.com/call, C-A-L-L. That URL again is jonathanstark.com/call.